jump. 2-on-2-on-2. That bomb's so far. Tick, they gotta move quick right now. They're going for it. The defuse is already happening. Hiko, are you kidding me? He's gonna go for it. They win the round. Hiko picks up a triple and Cloud9 win it. What?
My heart's beating, my hands are shaking.
He's thinking about it. Here it comes.
Man, from
that guy's
to the
pretty
bottom.
Close.
They're gonna dive in. It was the time.
It's
the exhausted Uzi. Oh, on the back, they're trying to get him. But Zero's taking over. Sorry, he's gonna go down as well. Insane low. Insane goes down. Now Uzi is
oh my
yes. There's a god.
Are you kidding me?
Let's keep it clean. It's family show.
Family show. Family show. Family show. Family show. Family show. Family show. Family show. Family show. Family show. Family show.
Well, hello everyone. Episode 4 of the Center Ring coming at you live, pre-recorded from an undisclosed location. We are back from vacation. Or I am anyways. Brandon never went anywhere.
I was working.
Yeah. Well, I was proposing, so what's more important?
Congratulations.
Thank you, sir. My name is Tim. His name is Brandon. We are the Center Ring. Your favorite, or maybe not. I won't make that claim. But we are a professional gaming podcast that you may listen to.
I think we win by default. I'm pretty sure we're the only one out
Look,
there still.
Look, we are at least top three. We are at least a top three professional gaming podcast, and I'll take that. I'll take that. You don't ever have to tell people how many there are to be top three, so I'll take it. We are back from a little hiatus there. I went on vacation, proposed to the lady, so now I am engaged. We have that. Figured it was time to tie the knot. I was already way over my projected women who want to sleep with me in life, so I had to lock that one down. We have a great show for you here today. We have Riot versus G2A, if that's what you want to call it. Riot putting a ban on their sponsorships, or at least sponsorships in names. We'll get into that in a little bit. We have a little local fiasco as far as if you're in the Dallas DFW Metroplex area there. EGL, Epic Gaming Lounge, they kind of went MIA. On a lot of money, on a lot of prize money that is owed to people. We will discuss that. We'll discuss them in a little bit. Just kind of an issue going on right now in professional gaming as far as little tournaments go. Companies not being able to back their promises. Of course, we have the micro. Tons of things to touch on there. Dyrus retiring. If you ever wanted to work for Fnatic, you can sort of do that. All that and more. To start the show, though, it's old news if you followed it, but whatever. We were gone. We didn't get to discuss it, and I want to discuss it. It's near and dear to my heart, just being that it is my hometown. What I am talking about is the Big House, and more specifically, the Big House 5. Big Super Smash Brothers tournament that happens up near Ann Arbor, Michigan, or at least that's where it started. This year it was in Dearborn. So what that is, for those who don't know, who don't follow the Smash world, it is, take the time to Google it. You won't really, there's really not a good site, but look up the Big House Smash. You'll find it somewhere on Google if you look that up. What it is, it's a tournament that started out as just a very small, almost like friends start, like what we did in high school. You invite some friends over, we have a makeshift tournament, and then they invited some friends, and it gradually got bigger there. So kind of a background of that. It started at the University of Michigan. It started out as kind of a student club there. Back in 2011 was the first tournament. The I guess CEO, if you want to call it, the founder of the big house, was, his name's Juggle Guy. That's what he goes by. We don't use real names in this industry. Everybody calls him Juggle Guy. That is that, believe it or not, when he started the big house back in 2011, he was only 20 years old.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's only 24 he's right now. Yeah, so.
And now it's kind of grown into, well, and, like, if to give it a comparison, it's kind of like a major, like a major CS or Dota 2 tournament now. Like, it's huge.
I mean, as far as Smash goes, this year, the Big House 5 was the second largest Melee tournament behind EVO 2015, which is by far the biggest fighting tournament for any games there.
And, like, just before we get into, like, the winners and everything like that, like, I want to, like, give a shout out to their whole format. I know they've got the typical one-on-one kind of format to, you know, winner takes all, but their crew format where they literally have people from different regions or teams from different regions playing like a one-on-one elimination match between each other is awesome. Like, if you do, like, it's so entertaining to watch that and to watch them go against each other and to have people in the crowd actually rooting for different regions. It's awesome. It's just really neat.
Well, it's neat in the sense of when I caught myself thinking when I was watching it, normally with esports, I mean, you have teams that you root for, but I mean, there is nothing local. I mean, you know, you don't root for a local team. You don't have any reason other than just kind of attaching yourself to one team.
Right.
But there, I felt like it was kind of neat following a team from Florida or SoCal or Europe or, you know, certain parts of the world. And I felt like, like, Europe had all of Europe rooting for it.
And it, yeah, definitely. Really,
it,
I mean, there
was a different feel than just watching the single
there
player.
There were people with signs in the crowd, people with flags in the crowd, like region flags, like from Europe or Canada or United States. I mean, it was just a really, like, hyped up event. Like, they loved it, and it was awesome to watch. It was so entertaining to watch.
And to kind of give you an idea on how many, you know, the size of this event. Like I said, remember I said this was the second biggest Melee. So, I mean, you do have Super Smash Brothers for Wii U, which was also at this event. But, I mean, that just says something about Melee, where Super Smash Brothers Melee, it's right around, I think it's around 14 years old. The game came out in 2001. And it is still, as far as Super Smash Brothers goes, the top. I mean,
it's still the most competitive. I mean,
you've had Brawl that came out for Wii U, and then you have just Smash U, which is, oh, I'm sorry, Brawl came out for Wii, and then you have Smash U, which is for Wii U, which is kind, I mean, it's, I feel like that has a little bit more competitiveness than Brawl. Brawl never really stuck on the professional circuits. People, the pros just didn't like the way it played, and that's really why Melee has stuck around. Is because the pros.
Well, yeah, and word on the street was Nintendo kind of intentionally made Brawl less of a competitive game because of how polarizing Melee was. But
well,
that's a whole other discussion.
That's a whole other topic there for another day. But that is true. They say that the learning curve for Melee was so high that casuals couldn't really play if you were playing against someone who actually knew what they were doing. So that's a testament to Melee that it's been around for so long, and it's still, I would say, is on the upswing of things. I mean, just look at it. It's coming up for MLG New Orleans. It's a big contender there. And again, Super Smash Brothers for Wii U is there, but you don't see them advertising that nearly as much as they do Melee.
And that's a testament to two things. Like, one, the community behind the game. I mean, I know you're from Dearborn, but let's be honest. What other reasons there to really go to Detroit and all these people showed up from around the world? I mean, it's not a terrible city.
No,
I go up there once a year, so it's kind of nice. But, you know, I mean, that's the reason. So the community's huge. The game mechanics are great. And it kind of, you know, lends itself to being the graphics are kind of cartoony and not necessarily very realistic. So you never have that. You never have those expectations. It's just a well-designed game for something that can last a long time.
Right, yeah. So looking here, kind of giving a rough estimate, going from 2011, when Big House first started, there was 115 people for single Melee. So this wasn't teams. There were no crew back then. This was the first year for crew fights. 115. Kind of stayed around in that ballpark. 2013, it went to 173. 2014, last year's for the Big House 4. That's where you saw the first big jump. They had 570 single melee entries. This year, it jumped. It actually doubled this year. Big House 5 for single melee contenders was at 1,317. They actually had to up the cap because
too many people were signing
so
up.
So many people wanted to sign up that they had to move the location to a bigger location, and that's why it was in Dearborn, and they had to increase it just for that. But that, like I said, that's just for single. Total, I think it was around 2,000 people between double matches and crew and single and everything there. I think it was around 2,000 people in this tournament, which is massive when you think about it.
Yeah, especially for a game that old. That's incredible.
And this wasn't kind of the neat thing that I like about Big House that they do is that it's not necessarily invite. Actually, it's not invite at all. I mean, yeah, the pros are there, but I mean, they sign up and then they fight through it just like any other. I mean, anyone can go there, sign up, and then win it. So that's very entertaining there too as well. Of course, if we're just looking at the winners, Armada, looking at singles and melee, Armada came in first, Hungrybox came in second, and then crowd favorites, Mewtwo King came in third, and Mango, the American Prodigy, came in fourth. A little disappointing finish for Mango.
Fourth place,
and he actually, his doubles team got eliminated very early in the tournament there. So Mango didn't really have that great of a tournament.
You know, it's crazy,
top four. I mean, it's not bad.
All four of those names are the same names you've seen on Smash Brothers tournaments for, I mean, I remember those names back when we followed MLG when they were doing Smash.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess you could look at that as a good thing or a bad thing.
It's impressive to me. I mean, we talked about just the other day how quickly pro gamers have to retire. And like, these guys have been around forever.
Yeah, I mean, I think Mewtwo King is like 27. Don't quote me on that. I think he's around 27. He looks like he's about 45.
He's at retiring age for a pro gamer.
He's, you know, they don't have to worry about their looks. I'm sure they clean up nicely at these events. Anyways, so Armada and Hungrybox came in first and second, which Armada looks kind of like a D-bag, would be the nicest way to put it. He just doesn't look nice. He's European. And he reminds me of like the movie Dodgeball, where Ben Stiller's team.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
How they're just so serious. That's how Armada looks all the time. And then a lot of people don't like Hungrybox because I honestly don't know why they don't like. I think they don't like him because the way he plays and the way he acts. Because he plays with Jigglypuff, so he kind of play like a little.
Does he have some pretentious air?
He'll run, and yeah, it's just there's that. But if you were looking at crews, where what you were discussing before, where they took kind of like top players from a specific region and that's how they played, Mango's team in
dominated.
SoCal, they did win first there.
Yeah, Mango killed it in the crew battle.
Yeah, no, they destroyed it there. Europe came in second. Florida came in third. Hungrybox was on that team, so that's kind of note. And then Canada took fourth place there. No real surprise. I would assume that's how everyone kind of had that played out. I don't really know any other regions in Smash that would clean up that well. Jumping to Smash U singles, you had really the one character of note here, Zero took first. Which,
right,
Zero has been around since the dawn of time as far as Smash goes as well.
Do you know offhand if some of the players that were playing Melee also played Brawl, or was it kind of a one or the other type of deal?
You mean for Smash U, not
yeah.
Brawl?
Oh, excuse me. Yeah, Smash U.
I'm sure at the lower ranks, you probably had some crossovers. From any players of note, no.
Okay.
I mean, they stick to their game. I guess they have to practice so much they don't have time to try to, because you're also looking at different mechanics.
Right.
Very similar games, but very slight slightly different mechanics to where I'm sure that could mess with something.
Well, if you're watching frames like those guys are doing,
right? I'm nowhere near
doing, yeah,
the level of any of them when it comes to that game, so I wouldn't really know. But 0-1 Smash U singles. Again, I feel like Zero always wins Smash U. In fact, the very first tournament ever at E3 for Smash U, he won. Despite controversy, because he kind of ran the whole time and let the time run out. But so he's been around the Smash community for a while there. So that was the big house there. Again, just a really neat story. And I told you this. I wish there was someone with more time and skill in documentary making needs to find a way just to make a 30-minute YouTube documentary on this, because I would watch it. It's just fascinating to me how a group of guys can just start this up, and now it's a big thing. It's the second largest tournament there for this particular game.
And this may be just me, but like watching that on Twitch, I really, really hope that it never changes.
Well, and so, yeah, so this whole time in all of our past episodes talking about, oh, Counter-Strike's going to be on TV, and what's it going to take for people to take, you know, esports serious, and we've always preached that they need to be more mature and, you know, quit with this, you know, wear suits and maybe not swear or say anything that the PC police would ding you on. And this is the complete opposite.
It's so endearing when they're talking, like, and they have their community, and it's, I mean, everybody that talks, like all the casters and anybody that was involved in the production, they're all clearly just friends having fun.
Yeah, you can tell that they're friends. You can tell that they're basically college students, maybe previously graduated, or, you know, that general mindset.
I mean, you've mentioned it a couple times. That's what it reminds me of, is like when we got together, you know, in high school and college and just played games, like just for fun, just for bragging rights with each other.
And
that's what it's like.
And that's really how they act still. They don't even act like there's money on the line. They sound like they genuinely just enjoy hanging out with each other. And to them, it's just playing Smash and everything there. Unless you're Mango, and this kind of gives you an idea here just for the feel of kind of the whole tournament. This audio that I'm about to play here is from Mango, part of Cloud9's sponsorship team there. This was during the post-event interviews. So they interviewed, you know, all the pros and kind of talked with them. It is so casual.
I was like, yeah, the term interview is used very loosely. It's more like a post-game conversation.
It really is. It is so casual and unlike anything you've seen before. But again, this is how the whole tournament is set up. Just very casual. But also, I will say this. It's very casual and it's very fun to watch and entertaining, because it's just the Nintendo crowd, where, yes, they're very casual, but at the same time, it's all very family friendly. So you don't feel uncomfortable watching it with anything. I don't recall them swearing or saying anything very vulgar or anything like that.
I think
that
the worst thing, like during the stream while I was watching it, I think one of the guys like quoted satirically about, or quoted like an Eminem rap song. And it was kind of like a couple lines, and he was saying it out of like humor.
Right. So it's a very lighthearted feel of a presentation, but it also looks very nice. They definitely have it cleaned up and everything there. So, but here's a little piece of audio from Mango, where he was discussing about his fight with Hungerbox, and then kind of commenting on Armada and all that fun stuff.
He actually, that's the best he's ever played.
I thought
Not
he played
the best I've ever played, but definitely the best he's ever played against.
I thought he played
me,
pretty
so
amazing
I,
versus
I give him credit
Armada
for that.
Grand Finals too.
Played good. It's so sad when they're too. I don't know who to root for. America. Europe, HBox is a wiener. Armada's a wiener too.
It's like you just put the weights on the scale.
Yes,
and it's just
and
like
it doesn't. It always just goes like this. Sometimes I'm like, yeah, let's go HBox, and then sometimes I'm like, no, let's go Armada, and then I'm like, no, wait, this is all.
No,
bad.
Wait.
So I'm like constant battle.
I can't
when
win.
Playing. I'm like, no matter what, the nation hurts, and
but
no
in different
happy.
Ways.
Well, it hurts in Armada wins, then Europe wins. I hate Europe. Take that to the grave.
So there you have that. It's Mango kind of commenting on how we said earlier Armada and Hungerbox are kind of the two quote-unquote villains of the sport. And even Mango,
it's such a
who's
great
a competitor,
quote.
Just could you imagine like Tom Brady going like, oh, you know, Aaron Rodgers, Tony Romo, they're kind of wieners. And but that's kind of the whole feel of the thing where it's just they're there and...
Like you said, I mean, you listen to it, it doesn't sound like he's angry or vindictive. He's just joking around, kind of. Just
calling
I mean,
it how he sees it, yeah. But at the same time, he's not upset about anything. He's just there to have a good time. So that's the Hunger Box. They do that once a year. I definitely keep an eye on it for next year. Typically, it's always in October. So mark it on your calendars there.
High quality stream on Twitch, too. You can definitely find it there if you can't make it out, too. Dearborn.
Correct. And one thing that you don't see as much in Smash is sponsorship. A lot of the players are... They're sponsored by teams like Mango is Cloud9, Hungrybox is Liquid, and things like that. Armada is Alliance. But you don't have all of the same organization... I don't know what you want to call it. Shady umbrella that Counter-Strike and League of Legends and Dota falls under. Super Smash Brothers, it just has that more pure feel to it where it's not as corporate.
I'm going to say this in the nicest way possible. Smash Brothers is just a little bit smaller, so they haven't exactly had the people going after it that are...
Correct, right.
Kind of sketchy.
And one thing that's not small by any means is League of Legends. And you can't speak of League of Legends without bringing up Riot, which Riot Gaming is, I mean, they run League of Legends. They run the whole pro scene of it and everything there. And they've recently announced that they are somewhat banning.
They requested that every team remove any G2A promotions, so like any G2A logos, naming.
Yeah, they were.
Anything off their jerseys,
requested
gear,
quote unquote.
It wasn't a request. It was like, hey, you need to get this off if you want to play League of Legends.
Right. And what G2A, real quick, if you're unfamiliar what G2A.com is, you can look it up. Basically what it is, it's a website that resells CD keys for computer games.
Yeah, so I heard it described as what they do is they go to regions or places where a CD key may be cheaper because the economy isn't as good in the region, and they will buy up all the CD keys, then sell it for a higher price in other regions, but still cheaper than what if you were to go down to your local retail store and buy one.
So I'm sure everyone has their own opinion on that.
I mean, it's not really illegal.
It's not illegal.
The consumers are benefiting from it.
If you're a consumer, you love it because, hey, I just got this for a little cheaper. Sometimes it can hit a bump in the road where that key's already been used before or whatever. Or they had
a huge deal where they got a bunch of keys from people that were emailing publishers saying, hey, we need to review this. You know, give us a demo CD key. And then they were turning around and reselling the demo CD keys. So
they've had their fair share of, you know, shadiness as far as the public eye would be concerned. One thing, though, that's really, I mean, game developers don't like them because this, I mean, it's kind of like
undercutting them.
It's used games at GameStop. You could go turn around, buy a used game at GameStop. Well, EA is not seeing a penny from you buying that used game.
Which, why?
GameStop can recycle the same thing over and over and over again.
And that's why we started seeing companies introducing that. To use the online features, you either have to have a unique code that you get when you buy the game brand new or pay another $10 or $5 or whatever it is. I mean, it's the same situation.
It's essentially the same thing, and that's going to be a struggle that we're not going to discuss here because...
That's a rabbit hole.
Yeah, quite frankly, you could talk about it for days and still have no results. So either way, Riot requested that every team in their, you know, League of Legends series there, the championship series, removes G2A from any title sponsor, any, you know, if you have it on your jerseys or anything like that, that you remove their logo from it. They can still be a sponsor. They just really don't want to see it.
They can be a sponsor, but they cannot get any of the benefit from sponsoring a team.
Right. Partially, this is now Riot's not doing it because of what the site is.
Well,
Riot has terms that in League of Legends, you can sell your account for profit. If you have a high ranking account, people will want to buy that so they can bypass the lower ranks. You can, you know, things like that. Or you can, you know, sell it to where someone boosts up your account and things like that. That is against the terms and conditions of Riot. So they're like, okay, well, if this site's supporting it, clearly we cannot support the site, which to me, I know people were having issues with this, similar to where Counter-Strike was trying to control, you know, hey, we don't want betting sites as a title sponsor. They can sponsor you. We don't want them as your name. This to me is similar to that, where people were still freaking out over it. And maybe I've just learned that I'm a corporate man. I don't know. Maybe I to me, Riot has every right to do this.
Riot does. The thing that concerns me is like, this is, where does it stop, I guess, if you've got, and especially if you've allowed it up until this point. I mean, you know, you've already got people saying that, you know, you've got the big team association that just broke last week where they're demanding travel costs and stuff from these tournament organizers. So the logical thing is like, they're already hurting for money. And then you're taking away, you know, G2A is a huge sponsor. Like, they're not small.
They sponsor.
They're huge.
Virtually
every team
you see GTA somewhere on their jersey.
Like even streamers on Twitch, like every top five streamer you look at has a G2A logo.
They don't make it hard at all to be. I mean, you basically put G2A anywhere on your page, and
so I mean, like, that's a lot of money to make up. And I'm kind of worried of these big game companies kind of saying, you know, sorry. No.
But here's my thing with that, though. Don't you think saying that some sponsors are allowed and some sponsors aren't, isn't that just part of pruning the league, making it a little bit more professional? And look, I know a lot of people say this where there's nothing wrong with gambling. Why are they doing this? There's nothing wrong with, you know, this ad or this product and everything like that. But don't you think fine-tuning where we put these sponsors is part of growing the league? I mean, they need to kind of, if they feel like this is part of legitimizing,
you know, I would
look
agree
of it,
if we had somebody to kind of fill in the gap. But I mean, you don't see
Coca-Cola,
Gatorade, or Coca-Cola, yeah, or Pepsi, or you know, I mean, we've got some big sponsors, but nothing like that size. That's just a huge gap to make up. And on G2A's side, they put out this like this gigantic letter of rah rah, we're esports, we just want to grow the community and all this other whatever propaganda, if you want to call it that. And they claim that they took down all the stuff that Riot was upset about, and Riot still said, we don't want you here, essentially.
I mean, and that's their choice to do. I honestly don't see, I don't see that big of a concern. I get the big hole that, you know, the teams are going to have to fill by losing that payment. Now, you do have some teams, though, that are saying it's not a big deal at all because G2A wasn't paying them any money anyways.
I did hear about that, them being late on payments and struggling to make their commitments.
I mean, they sponsor so many teams.
Which that might be a bad business decision, making that kind of commitment level that they did.
I mean,
so
they might have overcommitted to too many teams, and
yeah,
you know, so there's some teams there that aren't concerned about this being an issue at all. You know, they were basically like, yeah, sure, we'll remove them. Doesn't affect us any. And I really do think that esports are going in the direction of where they're starting to be on TV more. I mean, League of Legends is going to be on, what's the British one? BBC?
Yeah, BBC is going to broadcast them.
So BBC is going to broadcast League of Legends. You have Counter-Strike being on TBS some point next year.
Fox Sports Australia just broadcast the Melbourne Invitational in Australia.
Yeah, and we'll discuss that here in the micro. So, I mean, it's growing. It's going to be on TV. When you get on TV, that opens up a whole nother door. I think one thing that esports is really lacking on as far as revenue going is advertisement. During their streams, there are times in between matches where it's like 30 minutes between a match where you're sitting there looking at a screen with the schedule of the event or a picture of the crowd or something really not relevant, to where if they just timed it out more and did a little bit more planning, they could treat it just like an intermission show where, you know,
you've got a small halftime.
Yeah, let's talk about this for
sandwich
10
by,
minutes.
By two commercial breaks or whatever it is.
Yeah, 10 minutes, 5 minutes of commercials, back to talking,
and
commercials,
you know, that's
and then
probably,
go to the
that's
game.
Probably a side effect of being on Twitch and Twitch kind of dictating when and where commercials can be shown. I'm not sure how Twitch would be, if Twitch would be all right with ESL being like, oh, we're going to show commercials on our stream.
For Coca-Cola. While,
right, if Twitch has not seen any of the money.
That's a very good point, that Twitch lets you, no matter how big your stream is, Twitch lets you do it completely for free.
Yeah.
Now, subscribe, I mean, they get their money through if you're really popular and subscribers and all that, but essentially, it's completely for free. So that is a very good point. But again, I mean, that is something that they're missing on, is just regular ad revenue. It doesn't always have to be through a sponsor. I mean, you see an ad during a football game, you don't think that's maybe it is by definition a sponsor, but it's not necessary. You know what I'm saying? You see an ad for a car during a football game, that's not a sponsor, that's just an ad. They're playing the ad during that football game.
And going back to my earlier point about not seeing some of the bigger sponsors that are in more traditional outlets and sports, the fact that we can't show commercials might be a big reason why nobody wants to touch it. I mean, if you think about it, the only thing you get is their name, the team names, and a logo on a shirt. That's all you get. Anyway.
Yeah, and I agree. I think esports as a whole, and maybe Riot will be the ones to maybe start doing this, just because they are.
Riot's
have the size.
Riot's in the best position because they control 99.8%
right.
of their tournaments.
What we always say CSGO is struggling in the sense of there's not a governing body. Well, Riot is about as close as you're going to get to a governing body for League of Legends.
Hate them or love them, they run the tournaments. It's their stuff. It's their game. If they needed to, they could set up their own broadcast without Twitch. And guess what? The people that watch League of Legends are going to go watch that stream. I mean, and that would open them up for all the sorts of stuff.
And you're exactly
about.
Right. So I think they would be the first trendsetters. And you know what? Maybe even, and this just came to mind, maybe they drop G2A knowing that this deal with BBC, they're going to make up for it. Now, one of the issues there is that who's going to see that revenue money? When you're starting to get your revenue money through ads, again, constant rotating door of conversation, this is where a player union would have to come in, to where if the league, if Riot is making all this money off of, you know, a Pepsi ad, so you're taking away sponsorship opportunities for players, adding sponsorship opportunities for organizations, who's going to see the increase in revenue? Which, are the players ever going to see that, other than prize money, which I think only goes so far?
And you know, it's kind of funny that goes full circle back to a couple days ago when we were talking about the players union. This G2A thing has just brought a whole nother aspect of that conversation where it makes you realize that you don't really just have the players and the teams. You've got players, teams, and tournaments, and all three of those people are basically negotiating against each other for their cut of the market. And this G2A thing just magnifies all of that, because the G2A thing affects, even though Riot doesn't want them there, so it does, the tournament's arguing against it, the players and the teams, that's how they get paid, is the, you know, so it's kind of interesting to see it all come back around.
And that's, yeah, and I really do feel like that's maybe one thing that we haven't discussed in our discussion here, to where we're looking at it always from a Riot perspective, But you are right when you just said that this is part of those players' paychecks. Whether how big or how small that is, I don't know. I'm sure it's somewhere on the internet to where you can find it, but
yeah, I'm not sure how much this, I don't think the sponsorship money plays a whole lot into the player salaries, and that's more of.
But it does play something.
It does play some because that's where the teams get the money to pay the players. But I think the players rely a little bit more on merch and streams and donations which whole nother topic. That really bothers me that players rely on donations to make a living. But that's
just the nature. It's like tips is really how you want to figure it out. But I think one thing that the sponsorship money does go into is to the organizations paying for flights, hotels, entry fees. And I think that's one thing that people are saying, okay, if you're taking away this giant, I mean, look at Cloud9.
They're G2A Cloud9. It's all over the place.
Yes, that is in their title. It's really Cloud9 G2A. That's a huge sponsor where I'm sure because of it being in their title, they probably rely on them for a lot of the interactions there as far as the booking hotels and everything like that. For now, because
that's what the teams were arguing for against the tournament organizers.
Right. And it's going to trickle down. I mean, if Riot does it, you have all these teams like Cloud9 that has a team in League. You have Cloud9 and, you know, Counter-Strike, Hearthstone. You know, that you have all these big organizations that have a team in all these different games. So if they have to remove the title sponsor because League of Legends is saying it's not allowed, well, now you're not only affecting the League of Legends team, you're affecting, you know, I mean, guys like Mango, who is Cloud9, has nothing to do with League of Legends, but because Riot is saying Cloud9 cannot have it in their title, are they only going to change it for League of Legends tournaments? I guess only time will tell on that one.
That's a great point.
Technically,
in Counter-Strike and everything, people can still carry the title sponsor, but it's just a question of if G2A is still willing to pay what they were paying to not be carried in the arguably the biggest esport they have right now, which is, you know, League of Legends.
Right. And speaking of willing to pay, that seems to be another issue that's always on topic in esports as far as the smaller tournaments are concerned, and even some of the larger tournaments are concerned, that these tournament holders or companies are not paying their winners, whether that be at all or in a timely fashion, or they try to push it off as far as they can until finally people are knocking on their door and then they're like, okay, well, what we could do is we could do this. So recently, and we actually discussed it, I believe in episode 2, it was our local spotlight. Insane how this all worked out. Yeah, right? That's on us. Epic Gaming Lounge, the local spotlight that was in episode 2 in Addison, Texas, recently just was in the news about they threw this big 40K tournament that involved all these different games, Call of Duty, Mortal Kombat, some other games in there. The prize money total equaled $40,000.
For everything. Yep.
For everything, for all the games there. Well, just recently, we're reading these articles and we're like, didn't we just bring this place up? This is such a small world.
I didn't even remember it. I was like, man, there's another tournament skipping out on their money. And you were like, Tim was like, dude, we just talked about them.
We just 2 weeks gave ago. Them a shout out for a little Counter-Strike tournament we were doing. We were like, man, this is great. A local establishment. Finally, you know, grassroots gaming. This is what it's about. This would be so cool to have an event there. It'd maybe be cool to even have show there, you know, for a tournament.
And
well, not anymore, because they are completely MIA. This $40,000 tournament, they never... I guess they've somewhat paid players, but basically they never paid them.
Yeah, well, last I read that they hadn't paid anything out. The Twitter, Facebook, dark, website permanently closed.
I did not know in the year 2015 it was possible
to disappear?
To wipe your company off the face of the earth, but they managed to do it.
They did it. Yeah.
And I was able to track down their CEO, co-founder, whatever you want to call him. The, I guess he's not a CEO of anything anymore, but the CEO of Epic Gaming Lounge, I was able to track down his personal website because he is a graphics designer. So obviously he still has to make that living. So I emailed him on that to see if maybe he wanted to come on the show, do a phone call, or maybe even at least answer some questions through email. Never heard back from him. I sent him two or three emails. And even then, I'm acquaintances with someone who...
We had a guy that asked if we wanted to come out to the tournament to, or you to come out to the tournament to help like cast or something.
Yeah, and to do a show and do some play-by-play for them. I messaged him, and I never even heard back from him. So whether that's just coincidence, maybe it was poor timing on my part when I asked him, "What? Hey, what's the deal? What happened to it?" But he never responded the few times that I tried contacting him just to see what the hell is going on with this place. So it's like the employees, the founder of it, everybody is just keeping their mouths shut.
And Verizon was a partial sponsor for this tournament.
Well, weren't they the big one, right?
It was Verizon was the biggest sponsor, but they sponsored part of the tournament, and it had to do a lot with like the internet connection and the streaming and stuff like that. Verizon missed such a huge opportunity to make some national news and to help pay these players, and basically said, "Nope, that wasn't our job.
Not our problem. We handled our part. You need to deal with them."
Yep. And didn't even try to contact them or anything. They basically just said, "You know, that's, you know, we did what we were supposed to. Sorry. You know, whatever."
I mean, they're done. Verizon, I saw the statement from Verizon. I mean, they basically wiped themselves from the situation. But throughout all, I mean, I don't know. I've tried looking up. Still, anybody from this Epic Gaming Lounge is just, they went dark. You cannot find anything on it. And it's so weird when you do find like old YouTube videos of like the grand opening and everything, because everyone's having such a good time. You see videos from this 40K tournament having a good time, and you're always wondering, did this guy, and this is a stretch, so don't jump on me, did the founder of this start this company, host these tournaments with the full intention and idea that he wasn't going to pay these guys? Or was it just that he didn't make enough money from these tournaments to keep the lights on and pay $40,000 worth of prize money, to where in retrospect he was like, "Oh, I can't do this. I'm just not going to pay them for now."
You have to wonder. I mean, like you said, the fact that somebody managed to completely erase themselves from the internet.
No, I mean, he didn't do a statement. He wasn't like, "Hey, I goofed. I will make it better. For now, we got to close shop." No, he just deleted everything within days. Within minutes, really. I mean, it just, all of it was gone.
Yeah, it's sad. It kind of upsets me, the fact that happened in our backyard too.
And it happened right here. But you know, it happens everywhere else. You know, these small tournaments here, again, you bring up maybe this was where a player union would happen, but it's such a, you know, this is a local tournament. Yeah, some pros were there for, you know, Mortal Kombat and everything.
But you know, this guy's not signing payment contracts or like 90-day term,
these
net
players
term contracts
are,
or anything.
But and they shouldn't have to. You shouldn't have to sign a contract for every tournament you join. I mean, here's my entry fee. You know, maybe sign a piece of paper just to say, "Yes, I'm in this tournament." And that should be all that's required. There shouldn't have to be a player union for every podunk pop-up tournament out there with, you know, for this example, a bunch of high school, college kids just wanting to play in a tournament.
Yeah, basically. It's frustrating is all it is.
It's what it's turning into, though, to where...
Well, everybody's still trying to get a slice of the pie, and it's like, especially when you have to offer $40,000 as a prize pool to get people to come out.
But like I said, though, I mean, it was a big thing. This was kind of like their big opening thing of they wanted to be in the scene. And unfortunately, just like Paradise Gaming, I feel like their, you know, their eyes were hungrier than their stomachs, because they just felt like they had it. They felt like, hey, this is going to be really easy. You know, if they give us the prize money, we'll just turn it around and pay it right back. And that's not how it worked out. And now there will be a follow-up story. I'm going to keep an eye on this, because there will be a follow-up story. There's no way. I don't care if the players didn't sign contracts saying that you had to pay. And, you know, in a court of law, he could say, like, well, I never promised them I would pay them. It's not going to hold up. There will be a follow-up story. Like I said, the guy is still out there because he has his own personal business.
Yeah. If you're going to try and run a website to sell stuff, specifically your skills, you can't.
I mean, you're going to get found out. You're going to get found out. So we will definitely follow up on that. For now, though, let's get into the micro. We don't have any production value on this show.
That was
a
well-executed, self-made echo.
That's all we have. I have no production value. I always want production value, and then life gets in the way. I have to,
to get married and all that.
Yeah. Warm up some hot dogs on my diet. So let's see here. Micro, the big one that we can discuss here is Dyrus retires from professional gaming.
At the ripe age of
23.
23. I was thinking at least 26. I thought it was what he was. 23.
No. Dyrus, TSM, he plays League of Legends, or played. His contract, actually, with TSM is up October 27th. So as of October 27th, 2015, he will be officially retired from competitive gaming. He is 23, Dyrus. He was TSM's top lane player. I mean, he's been around the block for a while. He's actually one of two players that have qualified for all of League of Legends Championship Series. He's been there since the beginning. The other player was Yellow Star, I believe. And again, I really don't know what retiring from competitive gaming means.
Means you're either going back to school or trying to find a real job for now.
But I mean, I don't, dude, he's, I don't actually, get it. You get it when people retired from like Halo 3 and remember, and then they come back. He's 23. What's he going to do?
I found a pretty interesting article. I'll try and find it again and put it in the show notes about competitive gaming and retiring. Oh yeah, surprisingly enough, written by Cracked.com did the article on it, which I thought was just nothing but clickbait, funny articles.
Unaware they actually did reporting.
Yeah, but this is like a serious thing. So they actually said that 24, 25, 26 years old, your reaction time for competitive gaming is not as good as the 18, 19.
Whatever.
I'm like, there's no way those three years can make that big of a difference.
No, it doesn't. That's a ridiculous, ridiculous statement. If people can play actual physical sports until, you know, 40s, mid-40s for some of these sports, he can play
video
games past the age of 23. So, congratulations to Dyrus on a fabulous career. I don't understand why you're retiring.
Well, and I'll put his retirement interview in the show notes as well, so you can kind of take a look at his last game.
It was a very emotional interview.
The crowd was very emotional.
Everybody was crying and into it, but I just don't understand. It just sounds goofy, like retiring from competitive gaming. Like, you're still going to play this stuff every week. Whatever. I guess I'm not part of that life. Maybe it does take a toll because you don't make nearly as much money as a professional athlete, but I feel like you do have to put in as much time, especially at his level. So there's that. What do you have for the micro?
So we kind of touched on it briefly, but Fox Sports Australia broadcast the Melbourne Crown Invitational CSGO tournament to some seriously mixed reviews.
Who won that? VP?
Virtus.pro did win that, which that's kind of mean for Virtus Pro to go to Australia to beat up on some Australian teams
that's
for a prize
pool.
That's
what I thought. I was like, wow, okay.
It's like, you guys get every major you could want in Europe, but go beat up on the Renegades down there in Australia that are just hoping for a little payday before they head out to TBS.
You know? I mean, if you're hosting a tournament in Australia, don't you try to set it up to where your home teams are? It's like a homecoming for football, right? You're supposed to set it up to where your home team wins. You don't want to get embarrassed by.
Yeah. So I mean, in this discussion, every time esports ends up on a traditional sports channel, my favorite thing to do is to go on Twitter and monitor the Twitter account for the channel that it's on.
And just see all the support that esports has.
You get awesome tweets like, hey, at Fox Sports Aus, what drugs were you on when you decided to waste 2 hours of sports schedule on some blokes playing video games? It warms my heart.
It really does. It just lets me know that this is going somewhere.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with ESPN has, you know, they've had Dota on there.
Yeah.
They've had Heroes of the Storm. And it's the same thing. Go on their Twitter and it's everybody saying everything they could think of is like, why are we watching these virgins sitting on their couch playing games? And they just don't take the time to at least watch it.
What's funny is it goes in kind of waves too. Like, you get this first wave of like angry viewers that expected a rerun of a rugby match, talking about Australia or football or whatever. And then the next wave is all of these people that were told about the Twitter thing, and they all get on and start talking garbage to these other people that were talking garbage to esports, and it's just a vicious cycle, but it's entertaining.
It's entertaining nonetheless, and you hope that like the TV companies take it all with a grain of salt.
I'm sure
they do, because I'm sure they even look. I'm sure the TV companies get hate for literally anything they show on the channel.
Somebody's always going to be upset,
right? So hopefully they don't read that and think maybe these esports isn't the way to go. Maybe this isn't worth our investing. And hopefully they do. I mean, just stick it out and realize, because I think once people realize that this stuff is on TV, you will get, you know, less Twitter hate once they learn.
Yeah. Well, they'll either avoid it or move on. And finally, G2 Kingwin, not to be confused with G2A, although I think they are a sponsor. Anyway, Gamers 2 Kingwin took home the Heroes of the Storm Major League Season 3 European Championship with a huge prize pool of $5,000 for first place for the entire season.
Mm-mm-mm.
Small game. Paying the bills. Yep.
That's another thing with...
That's less than $1,000 a person for the whole season.
So there
you go.
Kind of
rough.
There you go. Look, they know that going into it, right?
Oh, they do. Heroes of the Storm is a small game. So.
Every game knows that, you know, Counter-Striker, they'll get the big pools. And
so they actually beat, I know I'm going to butcher this, Rokat?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They beat Rokat 3-1 to win that.
So there you go. Congratulations to them. Heroes of the Storm trying to still stay relevant in the esports world. One measly tournament at a time. It was actually quite big when it first came out, but I think, like we said before in a previous episode, I think that's more Blizzard driven. I think Blizzard has enough money in their pockets.
Oh yeah, there's
to keep Heroes of the Storm alive.
And there was a whole group of people that jumped on that game hoping to get a little slice of that money from Blizzard. So
there we go. We'll see what happens there. I know they are coming out with the Overwatch beta here soon. And that's another one where people are saying that, you know, Overwatch could become the next big competitive game, which every game that comes out now could be the next big esport, and only time will tell. But I really don't think anything's going to dethrone Dota, League of Legends, and Counter-Strike. You do have those outliers like Hearthstone, which has its place in it. You do have games like Smash and Mortal Kombat and Street Fighter, where when the big events are up, people like it. But again, you have your big three there. One more thing for the micro. If you ever wanted to somewhat work for Fnatic. You do have your chance. They are looking for glorified volunteers.
Not even glorified. That's what it is.
I don't know. It's like an intern, but worse.
It's literally a volunteer position. Like, you are volunteering to help them by working for free.
Right. So I have some I printed out here. It's kind of the gist of it. The position. All positions start on a volunteer basis with the potential to grow into part-time paid roles and more for the right candidates. So basically, work for free for a very long time, probably. And we might give you part-time money. So that's very vague there. We want to see your social media and writing skills. Please submit at least one example of any social media account you've worked or collaborated on. Could you imagine some of the submissions they got? Any social media account you've worked on?
I kind of laugh at those because I'm like, I look at my Twitter account. I'm like, if I submitted this, they would probably laugh at my face.
Like, what does that even mean? Some potential projects and contribution areas. Social content planning. Insight and analysis. Event coverage and reporting. So those are some things you might be able to do. Regular time commitment. This is what cracks me up. So Fnatic is offering you a volunteer position. We know that life is busy and appreciate any time people choose to spend supporting us. Whether you're able to get involved for an hour, 10 hours, or even more, it will all be equally appreciated. If you're volunteering and putting in more than 10 hours a week, maybe you should just look for a regular part-time job.
I totally get it. There's people out there that say...
No, you will get it because here are some of the benefits. This will be an experience you'll never forget. You'll never forget it. So there you go. That's definitely worth it. And I quote, you will be swagged accordingly.
I wrote an article on the website about this exact thing, about why people are working for free. And it's basically down to the fact that there's so many people that want to be involved in esports that companies don't have to pay people. I cannot imagine how many people have applied for that position.
Well, the view, they tell you it's around 2,000 people have just viewed the application.
Oh,
so I'm sure
insane.
Half of those people have at least put it. Well, because it says anything goes. Okay, so I could be a volunteer and you give me free swag? Like, what are we talking? Are we talking like Fnatic mouse pads? Are we talking like things that
whatever they have left in the warehouse?
Right. So I mean, I'm sure their applications,
someone brought this up when discussing it, that this is the same team that was just a part of a team association that demanded tournaments increase payouts for Counter-Strike teams to a minimum of $75,000 a tournament, for League of or for Dota 2 a minimum of $100,000 a tournament. And these tournament organizers need to cover their travel expenses, 4-star hotel, reasonable flights, and we need you to work for free.
Listen, I work in radio, so I feel for these people about to volunteer. Because I also work in an industry where people will get paid nothing to do, and they can pay you nothing because they know there's a million people lining up to do exactly what you do.
Right behind you.
Yep. So I feel you. Well, that about does it for the show. Episode 4 of The Center Ring is in the books. Thank you so much for listening. If you listened all the way through, or even if you skipped through, I appreciate you just as much. Tell your friends, tell your family about us. You can find us on the website, pgn.tv/TCR. You will find past episodes, show notes, some articles written by some talented writers.
More importantly, the subscribe button in iTunes is right there at the top. Click it.
We make it easy so you can subscribe to iTunes. We also have Stitcher if you're an Android user. That will be good. I don't really know how that works on Stitcher, but go for it. Our Twitter account is at The Center Ring. You can follow that for any show news or anything like that. I am at Pirate Mushroom. You are?
At Brand EGN.
There you go. So give us a follow. Let us know what you think of the show. And again, thank you so much for listening to The Center Ring. We will be back for episode 5 all in due time.